Welcome back to the Boys Dynasty Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your co-host, Josh Schaefer, back again with Mr. Hen. 2 weeks in a row, Brian. It's pretty good for us.
I know. Look at this consistency that we've started here.
The pod has never seen... I mean, I guess you are incredibly consistent. But in terms of two back-to-back team hosts, maybe that's happened once this season so far. I feel like there's been a lot of mix-ups happening.
Yeah, I know. It's been a little bit of a rotating door, but it's exciting to be back. I feel like this is... I am really looking forward to this, honestly. Not that I don't enjoy the pod every week, but some weeks it feels a little bit more like a chore, where this week it's like, this is exciting. There's some good stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. It was, you know, we may even skip. We could skip our little opening check-in and just jump right into fantasy football, because what I thought was going to be a relatively quiet trade deadline quickly erupted into maybe the biggest one we've ever had in terms of volume of assets that were moved around at the actual deadline.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Maybe our first or second year got close, but man, this was a ton more than the previous couple of years. Like, I feel like the last couple of years, you almost forget it's the trade deadline because there's, you know, no more movement than normal. And this year, it was hectic. I predicted at the end of last pod that I felt like there was one big move in the league, and I sold us way short. We tripled that number, I would say. So, exciting stuff. I'm going to be very curious to hear your opinion on why you think this was a busier deadline than previous ones. So,
yeah, I think we can it's all about the trades this week. We'll get into the table a little bit at the end. And I think we need to go in chronological order, just, you know, so everybody understands the sequence of events. The first trade, maybe the biggest of the deadline, was between you and me. Aaron Jones for AJ Barner and a 27th third from Colin. You know, for me, this was, I didn't really think I was going to be making any big moves at the deadline. And it was more of a depth play of like, Aaron Jones has looked okay when he's playing, you know, like he is the back over Jordan Mason. And so giving up the 27th third, I like AJ Barner. Like, I would have loved to keep him. I don't know how you felt about it. It was either Barner or Kendre Miller that you were going to get. So probably feel better about getting Barner.
I do. Yeah. Especially not having to wait out the ACL tear on Kendre Miller. I like Barner. This was definitely more about getting a pick for kind of an aging veteran that wasn't going to help me, you know, down the stretch here. So it's, do I love the thing Austin pointed out, that I essentially trade Michael Pittman for AJ Barner and a third? No, a fourth as well. AJ Barner, a third and a fourth, we'll say. But that's not great return for what Michael Pittman has turned into this year. But as I mentioned in the group meet, nobody ever offered me even that package for Michael Pittman when I had him. So, yeah. I mean, I guess you got it, you know, just a little bit of bad luck with the way Pittman has turned out this year. But with Jones in this trade, this was a simple, you know, get a little bit of value, get a, you know, extra dart to throw at the board for an aging player in a season that is not going anywhere for me.
Yeah, it makes tons of sense for you. Like, Aaron Jones is going to be worth nothing next year. I mean, he'll be a roster clogger for sure. Somebody you'd probably don't want to drop, like an Austin Eckler kind of guy. You know, I think we'll get into this. It'll become a theme later in the pod around the idea of, and, you know, it's interesting with Pittman. A player is probably worth something objectively, but then if nobody in the league is willing to offer that, does it even matter? You know, like, is it like, do you stay prideful and just hold the player, like, because you're not getting what is fair value? Or do you just sell for whatever you can get? I mean, Aaron Jones, probably fair value for him, honestly. Like, you're not getting cheated by much. But I think overall, and we'll get into it with Tommy stuff, but yeah, it's an interesting question.
Yeah, I do think it's an important theme to consider as we go through the rest of these trades, because I really think that it's like a microcosm of having played together for 5 years now with the same core. Like, we all know each other in the way that we handle our roster so well that there's just no, like, you can't really like pull one over on somebody because everybody understands like what each manager is looking for. And what I really think happens is it like the elite players go for elite value in most cases, and the bottom tier players go for bottom tier returns in most cases. And it's that huge chunk in the middle that is just so frustrating because nobody acquiring those players wants to pay what they're actually worth. And nobody, because, you know, you kind of know they're a dime a dozen to an extent.
Sure.
And you can just move on to another manager and find the exact same player on their roster. And nobody wants to sell at a slight discount.
Sure.
Because they know the player is worth more than they're getting. So yeah. That's I completely agree. I think that's going to pop up quite a lot tonight.
And it's a wonderful transition till we get into what is the biggest trade of the trade deadline. Trade number two. We talked about it a little bit last week. Why is Austin holding Jonathan Taylor? He just had an insane week. Like, Austin is definitely safe from Waffle House, in my opinion, at this point. The gap is just too large. And he gets what I truly thought was impossible of getting fair plus bonus value for an elite asset at this point. Jonathan Taylor goes for Kenneth Walker, pick 1.04 in the rookie draft 2 or 3 years ago. Sloan's 26 first, looking likely the second overall pick. Matt's 28 first, late. Ongood's 2026 second, so the 1.11. So basically 3 firsts and Kenneth Walker for Jonathan Taylor. I have to admit, Brian, when I saw this trade come through, I was flabbergasted. I can't believe that Matt gave up this much to go get JT after getting Saquon. And, you know, I want to pose the question to you, and it relates back to what we were just talking about. Who was Matt bidding against for this deal? I mean, it is so much to give up. I know, Matt, you're loving this right now. But, Brian, what's your take on this? Obviously, you get your guy. Matt's starting lineup is awesome. What do you think about it?
I like it from the perspective of, like, this is the number one player in fantasy output.
Yes.
By a mile. So, like, to go kind of all in a year, I love to see that. And honestly, for the health of the league, I love to see a selling team get fair market value for their best player. And there is an aspect of, like I have respect for it in terms of, like, you come in with an offer you know is very fair for a player, you know, that you're looking to acquire, and the selling team just accepts. Like, I appreciate that it wasn't kind of this back and forth, but I also question it. You would probably know a little bit better than I would since you're a contending team, but it does feel like there wasn't a ton of discussion around Jonathan Taylor from other managers. So I do kind of wonder where, you know, what competition there was out there for JT, but I can't really blame a manager that is going all in. And JT is somebody that I think is, like, he's not going anywhere for the next 2 or 3 years. That 2028 pick is absolutely going to be late given, you know, Matt's roster at this point. And the thing is, too, like...
Is it, though, Brian? Is it absolutely going to be late? Matt is not that deep, and he now has basically no draft capital. He has your 26 first, and then outside of that, it's pretty bad.
Yes, but I think him still maintaining an early first in this year's draft makes this a little bit easier to stomach. Like, he's probably the only team in the league that can pull off something like this and still have a first round pick left over.
Yeah.
So I think from that sense, I mean, I think it's reasonable. I think it's, like, you know, it's an overpay based on the fact that there wasn't this open bidding war on JT. But I think like the, you know, value is a little relative. And when you have a team that is clearly ready to contend, like pushing your chips in, like I think you've experienced it. Like you've been to the playoffs, you know, 3 or 4 years out of the five we've been in this league and have yet to win a championship, not to rub it in. But you know, you gotta go for it when you're there because you never know how things are gonna break.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big risk. And honestly, I think this trade feels like a grand slam if the Saquon deal hadn't happened.
Yes.
But the Saquon deal happening and like Saquon just really not having a banner year makes this like you're kind of doubling down now on a big move. And if it pays off and wins a championship, if it wins one championship, it's totally worth it. But that's a big risk. And I agree, it could cut the window short. I think this probably took Matt's contention window from a 5 year to 10 year window to probably the 3 to 5 year window. And maybe five's on the long end. I think it's a really strong like 2 or 3 year window with maybe like a tail out to 5 years. But what are more thoughts from you on this one?
I mean, I do have to say, like, Jonathan Taylor, I was looking at the standings. Austin has scored more fantasy points than Dylan has this year. Like they're exact same. If it's not more, they're literally at the same number minus the decimal. And Austin traded away Saquon very early in the season. So Jonathan Taylor, even if you just look at head-to-head playoffs, Austin is in the playoffs right now. This man has literally willed him into the playoffs. And so you're getting the number one overall asset. I think it is literally impossible for Jonathan Taylor's value to get any higher than this.
Yes, definitely.
And it is, I would be shocked if Matt didn't offer this same package for somebody like Jahmyr Gibbs or something like that to see if you could get somebody a little bit younger. So I have to say that, you know, Matt is making the move to go get his guy, and he's making it at a time that I have said, you wait to acquire these running backs till the deadline, right? Like, this is such a huge move. You don't want to make this before you have to. And so I respect him doing that at this time. What I will say is I love Austin getting this 28 first from Matt. I think that this could be a Phoenix Suns situation where the Suns trade all of that draft capital for Kevin Durant. And then you're looking back now and you're like, this team's not very good anymore. Right. Yep. Matt's team is not that deep. I mean, he has some very good young talent. Smith and Jigba, Olave, Trey Benson on IR. Right. Those are some good players. Tyreek. But he has like old guys. Tyreek, Saquon, Stephon Diggs. He's starting Wandale Robinson and Stephon Diggs. Keenan Allen, like, just traded for him. I don't mind it as a playoff move, but I think Matt is saying, I'm either going to win this year or I'm going to win next year, and then I might be a fringe playoff team. And if, like, that's why, I don't know if, you know, I know Matt didn't have any other first to give away because he gave him away in the Saquon trade, but I think that this is a really nice pick for Austin to grab because probably if you're Matt, you're thinking, like, I'm in the playoffs, whatever, but I think we could see a world, you know, 2 years is a very long time. A lot of things change. We literally saw our four-time champion give up at this trade deadline. Like, things are pretty wild. So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say two thoughts on Austin. First, I want to give him a huge round of applause for holding JT as long as he did. I think there have been calls for him to trade JT and Saquon for going on 3 years now.
I think, yeah.
And he has held out. And there were points where I was questioning, is he just holding JT because he's a Colts fan and like wants to have JT on his roster? And I wouldn't have slighted him for it, but probably Mike and Matt would have pulled the trigger on a JT trade 2.5 years ago, probably. And we would have gotten, you know, a first and a young player for him or something like that and felt really good about ourselves and then would be kicking ourselves now. So Tons of credit to Austin for holding him as long as he did. I agree, there is no universe where JT gets more valuable. I even remarked to Matt, if I were Austin, I would have asked for legitimately three firsts from somebody looking to acquire him. Obviously, you know,
who can pay that though? Who has the assets for that? That's what I'm saying, though. Literally, Matt and Mike are the only two players who could have afforded to give up what was necessary to get Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's insane price. I mean, you're right, though.
I also want to point out, too, what I really like. I get your point about the 2028 first, you know, potentially kind of coming full circle by the time, you know, that draft comes around. But what I really like about it is the fact that that asset maintains value over the next three seasons and gives Austin a ton of flexibility with how to use it. Because if you look at it, he has an insane draft stash right now, like just sitting on picks and picks and picks. So he has three firsts plus Ongut's second. So he has four of the top 11 picks in this year's draft. He has his own second. Next year, he has two firsts. In 2028, he has two firsts. So over the next two drafts, he has five firsts and a top second, you know, coming this year's draft. So what I like about it is, like, if he drafts well and makes some good decisions and maybe gets some, you know, like, you know, some good, you know, production from his younger players, that 2028 first could be dealt in the future to make a JT type trade for himself when he's ready to contend, or it's, you know, another dart at the dartboard, you know, when you're ready to, you know, like try and like put the finishing touches on a young roster. So the fact that he gets to kind of sit on that for a while and decide how to use that, you know, when he's ready, I think is probably the most valuable piece for me.
You're 100% right. His team, looking at it right now, reminds me of how I felt about Matt's team at the end of last year.
Yes.
Where you're like, there's some nice pieces on here. And holy shit, this man has eight firsts, like, over the course of the next few years. And it is, and you're right. I totally admire his patience. It was an incredible, like, he got maximum value. And he got insanely lucky that Jonathan Taylor had the most insane year ever this year. Like, that Daniel Jones ended up being good. Jonathan Taylor is that incredible.
He stayed healthy.
Yes. Yeah. Just so many things. I don't want to, I know I'm giving, like, talking more negatively about Matt. I'm not trying to label Matt as a loser of this trade. I don't think he lost.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think he paid the price to get the number one fantasy asset this year. And I think it is high risk, but I totally get it. I mean, you have to, if you have a chance to win a championship, like, it is so hard. And it's so funny because I was thinking about it too. It was like, you know what? I'm just going to hold on Good's 27 first, and I'm just going to stay patient, because all you have to do is make the playoffs every year and then just hope that something else happens. But it is so hard to not be like, oh, if I just get this one more guy, like, that is, and it really can make a difference. Like, it was truly lucky for Tommy. So I admire Matt going all in, and it relates to the trade that I made with Tommy. Matt had actually texted Tommy about doing a trade for Derrick Henry prior to the trade deadline, but didn't hear back from him and pulled the trigger on the JT trade because Tommy never texted him back. And it was, from what I heard from Tommy, because I called him yesterday to work through our trade, was that he offered a first. Technical difficulties. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yep. We're good now.
When did you lose me?
You were talking to Tommy. Okay. They called him and stuff like that.
But Tommy said that Matt offered a first and a second for Derrick Henry before pulling the trigger on this trade. Did you know about this?
I don't think so. Matt may have mentioned it, but I don't think so.
So Tommy was pretty beat up about that one. I think he would have loved to have gotten that value for Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this is a huge trade. It is, I said monster trade alert in the chat. I think it is one of the bigger like trades for one singular asset we've ever had. Maybe the biggest ever. Yeah. I don't know who's gone for more than this.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Yeah, we've had bigger trades where there's been a higher quantity of big players moved, but this is definitely, I think, takes the cake for the single player acquisition. So, yeah, I did know Matt had kind of a plan A and a plan B. Obviously, this was the plan A. And I knew that plan B was Derrick Henry, but I don't think I knew what the offer was. So that's, yeah, I get it from Tommy's perspective. Yeah, this is...
Wait, Brian, monstrous. I have to ask. If it's you, would you do the trade? Would you do what Matt did? Would you have pulled the trigger on this?
Probably, yeah.
Really?
Just, yeah, probably. Just okay. Like, I don't know. It's probably like the... It's probably one of... How many players in the league do you think are legitimately worth two firsts and a, you know, high second?
And like Kenneth Walker. That's not nothing. I know you hate Walker because you keep offering him to me in our other league. But how many players are worth that?
So call it two firsts, a high second, and a mid second or something like that.
Non-QBs. Let's go non-QBs because Superflex makes it weird. Maybe 10.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. And that's – I think that's like – So, yes, I would do it just because it's so rare to be able to get a talent like that. And I feel like, especially for kind of my experience through this league, has been I have plenty of good players, but I just don't have great players. And
you need great players
make a world of difference. So I think I would make a deal like this. So,
yeah. It is so hard. Yeah. Even we look at all these rookies, we get so excited about them. How many of them end up becoming just wide receiver twos, like that may have a fringe wide receiver 1 week. And you're like, and they hold all of this dynasty value because of the potential to break out, but so few can actually punch through. Same with running backs too. If they get in a weird split backfield situation, get injured. Like this is, these players are not easy to come by.
Yeah. What, how much, I want to kind of transfer this conversation a little bit to, if Jahmyr Gibbs was available at this deadline, how do you think things shift? Do you think Sloan accepts, you know, that same offer for Jahmyr Gibbs?
If I'm Sloan, I am like, I feel like a fucking idiot right now for not. I would imagine Matt would have offered this for Gibbs. I feel like I would, if I'm Matt, I'd rather get Gibbs at 23 than JT at 26 if this is the price. And maybe it is a little bit more for Gibbs, but this would be an insane value. And I think you and I have different philosophies on this. Your philosophy, as you have described it in the past, is more, if you're a tanking team and you have very good young players, you should keep them, right? And hold on to them like they're worth something. And that is very true. But my personal philosophy is more so that if you have an elite asset and you're a tanking team, you need a lot of assets to eventually get better. Because Sloan's team has nothing. Like, there's no depth. There's two or three good players that you like on the whole roster. And so this is a literal, this is like an offering, like a golden ticket for a smooth transition into the rebuild era. So I think Sloan got a little bit greedy with Gibbs. I went to him with a few different offers. I think he just had it in his head. He didn't want to trade him, but I think that Austin probably would have gotten a lot less for Jonathan Taylor if Gibbs was on the table, because I think he would have had to compete with offers for Gibbs as well.
Yeah. And I think it kind of would have, you know, we're going into the baseball offseason here, and a big theme of baseball free agency is oftentimes there's like elite players need to sign before second tier players can sign, because essentially all the second tier players wait to see what the elite players get and then judge their market based on that. And I think it would have kind of been the same thing here, where contenders probably would not have wanted to go to Austin for JT until they knew they were out of the Gibbs sweepstakes. And I think it would have been hard for Austin to move JT without seeing what Gibbs goes for. And, you know, if, you know, all else being the same. So I think it could have thrown a huge ripple in here. You're of the mindset that Sloan totally should have traded Gibbs at this deadline?
100%. I think that yes, Gibbs is a fine asset for him, and I think, you know, I do think Sloan should have traded him. I will also say that Gibbs probably continues to be a valuable asset for the next, like, he will, his value could increase. I don't know by how much, because you get to this point where a player's value becomes so high that nobody can actually trade for them, right? That's why I think this Jonathan Taylor trade is so incredible, because he's in that tier of players that is almost, he's just on the edge of being untradeable, like, where there's no, like, he's just a little bit old, and I think that is the reason he was gettable at this deadline. Gibbs, I think, is kind of in that tier of untouchable players, at least for the next 2 or 3 years while he's under 25. So I see Sloan maybe wanting to keep him to avoid Waffle House for the next couple years, but one Achilles, one ACL injury, all this stuff can happen. Draft capital will always hold value. It is like the fixed asset of, like, a dynasty league. So I know fixed assets can lose value. So Dylan and Mike, yeah. But it is, like, fixed in that it will always gain value as you get closer to the draft. So I think Sloan should have moved him. What do you think?
Yeah. I want to hit a little bit more on, like, I think Sloan made it clear. He definitely made it clear to me. It sounded like he did to you too, that when he put all those, like, second round picks on the trade block and stuff, it was to acquire players that would help him avoid Waffle House this year. And he threw in the caveat of wanting young players that he could help in the future. But there's no legitimately quality players that can both help you avoid Waffle House and are good for your future that you're getting for a second round pick. So we'll throw that out there. But there's definitely a little bit of a theme of Sloan does not want to have to do Waffle House. So how much of Gibbs not being available at this deadline do you think was avoiding Waffle House versus, like, the strategy of holding Gibbs because he's a young asset?
I mean, it's got to be the Waffle House thing, because I texted him about Gibbs. Sloan texted me before this week even started saying, oh, do you want to make a trade? And he's like, I'm looking to buy. Like, I'm still in danger of going to Waffle House. So Sloan has no assets that he actually wants to trade a value for players of value. So I think he'll start to realize soon that, like, the draft is tough, man. Like, his first, you know, foray into the draft of Travis Hunter and Tyler Warren went, I mean, Tet McMillan, those three, I mean, you're not feeling great about that after the first 6 months, right? Like,
Warren feels awesome. The other two, yeah.
Warren feel, though? Let's, like, for real, 10 points a game, 10 fantasy points a game, that's not doing anything for you to keep you out of Waffle House. I mean, he's true. A nice tight end asset. But yeah. Sloan is terrified of it. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say real quick on Warren. Looking, I don't think I'd really looked at his specific fantasy point output. Warren is, like, totally going to be one of those players that you turn the TV on and you're like, this guy is really good at football. And then you've opened Sleeper and you're like, okay, that was good.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but no, it's not, I get that, your point.
Yeah.
Though.
Yeah. At
tight end, it's unique, but it's,
it is unique. Yeah. It is. He is a valuable tight end, which has some kind of value, but then you see Mike get George Kittle for a third and a fourth and David Njoku, which is, like, nothing. So, I think Sloan is terrified of going to Waffle House, and it brings up something you and I were talking about before the podcast. Sloan seems to have a problem with the punishment, how we have descending, and we'll get back to the trade deadline. We're not done. There's plenty more. But the descending punishment for people who continue to lose. He doesn't like that you lose the second time, the punishment gets easier. You lose the third time, punishment gets easier. He feels like it should consistently be hard. You and I have touched on this a little bit, that it shouldn't maybe always get easier. What do you think about this? And also, what do you think about Sloan working so hard to avoid it? Kind of two questions in one.
Yeah. I think it's hard because we haven't really experienced what a manager will do when, you know, their theoretical punishment is all the way down to 6 hours at Waffle House or something like that. So it's hard to, like, know for sure exactly how it would impact the league. My problem is that I think, like, the novelty of Waffle House is fun when somebody has never done it before. And it's like, oh my God, how are they going to do it? What's their strategy? How many they're going to eat? How long are they going to stay? Can we go visit them? All that kind of stuff. But once you've done it once, it kind of like, I kind of switch to what I think is Mike's approach to Dynasty, where, you know, it's like, we shouldn't have a punishment because tanking can be a legitimate strategy for, you know, and we don't want to scare people away from rebuilding because they might have to do this. And so I think that like having the decreasing punishment is keeps it interesting, because it's like, you get the like scary year one where you have to like figure out how you're going to get through it. And it's fun for the rest of the league to see. And it's enjoyable to like watch the table and see, you know, who's going to come in last and stuff like that. But I think if you did it every single year, or where it's 24 hours, or even if you did 24, 12, back to 24, back to 12, something like that, I think it legitimately impacts like manager strategies. Like I think I am probably, of the people that have done Waffle House, I feel like I'm the one that, I don't want to say like did it best, but like it impacted me the least of any of the managers. Like Colin was on his deathbed when he did it. And it would significantly impact my rebuilding strategy if I was staring down the barrel at 24 hours again, because it was not enjoy, or it's not something that I want to do again. Like it was fun to do once. It was fun to have people come visit and all that stuff, but I don't want to do that every single year. And I don't want that to like impact somebody like Austin engaging in a trade like this. No, because it's like, you know, Austin's roster is much worse than it was, you know, 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And even though we love his draft capital and stuff, he could very reasonably come in last the next two seasons. And that would suck. Like if, you know, he makes this like smart move for his team and then has to do two 24-hour Waffle House punishments, like that feels a little like unusual punishment, cruel and unusual, we'll say. So
I agree with you. I think what I want to say though is that it is such a delicate balance of the fun, because I would say watching Colin even do the wing punishment wasn't fun. I thought it would be more fun. I agree. It was like sad and like I felt bad, you know, like it was. And so the Waffle House the first time is definitely fun. It has the fun aspect, which I like. And I feel like when I think about our league, I like the idea of maximizing for what is the most fun. And fun means different things to everybody. But it would suck if it became that like we had a couple of people who had lost twice and then they're just full tanking, like from the very beginning, like they know they're not going to make the playoffs. They don't care. Like put me 6 hours in Waffle House. That doesn't matter. Like, I think we do need to avoid that being the case, because the regular season can, like, we haven't really had a competitive regular season in 3 years, 2 or 3 years at this point, it feels like, where we actually, I mean, last year Mike had a shot to get in the playoffs, so there was some intrigue there, but it's basically always five teams competing for four spots, and it rarely gets that interesting. And so I like the idea of there being more teams. At the same time, I 100% agree with you that I don't want people being scared to like execute a strategy. So I don't know what the, and I was talking about this with you beforehand. Could there be some like what would be fun? Is there something more fun that the punishment could evolve into that's maybe embarrassing but not painful, you know, like, because the wing thing was painful, you know, like I don't want to watch people necessarily be in physical pain, but maybe like some intense embarrassment or something like that could be a good alternative.
Yeah, I do think it's worth, you know, revisiting with the league at large. I know that we've kind of operated with, you know, like you have to have lost to have a say in, you know, what happens with the punishment. But I do think it would be enjoyable to have maybe like revisit the idea of what happens the second, third, fourth times you come in last in this league, because I do think it's tough, because it's like I definitely do, like you're saying, I don't want to completely remove the punishment, because then you're it's open season on teams, you know, completely bottoming out and, you know, trying, you know, in a race to the bottom. Yeah. But I also, yeah, like I was saying, I don't think it's a good idea to maintain 24-hour Waffle House punishments every year or every other year, even just for the sanctity of the league. Like, I think if that's the case, you have a ton of managers like Sloan who are going to actively avoid Waffle House at a higher priority than winning. Yeah. And it's just going to be like, what can I do to ensure my, you know, spot 5 through 8 where I'm like never really, you know, worried about having to go. And I don't think that's good either. So yeah, I think it's worth it. Like, I think everybody else in the league should kind of reconsider what are some interesting, you know, punishments that we could consider that would not create active, you know, avoidance.
I'm sure there are problems with this idea, but maybe the proposal would be that you can't get the first overall pick if you have been to Waffle House already. You know, like, there's probably some big problems with that, but like, just that you can't, like, that would discourage you from flat out tanking, right? Like, then you're at least trying to get second, but that is reserved. Or like, you know, maybe the idea would be that you can get the you can take the first overall pick if you want it, but you have to do the full 24. Or you can like move down the draft board if you want to reduce your time or something like that. Like, you get the decision of voluntarily pushing yourself downward. That could be like an interesting wrinkle to it, because then like you could want to be competitive, or you could be like, fuck it, you know, like I'm going to get last and then I'm just going to pick fourth, you know, like I'm just going to aim for fourth. Or you could try and game it and finish second. I don't know. Just something like that. That might.
Another interesting idea.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Back to the deadline. So we agree. You agree too, that Sloan was trying to avoid Waffle House. Like, that was his 100%. Major goal. Yeah.
Yep.
Cause Goff would have been another great asset. I don't know who necessarily was buying a QB and for the playoff teams, but again, somebody else really could have looked into trading.
Yeah.
Okay, so we move on. Austin does the monster trade. I think that happens on Wednesday, Tuesday, something like that. Wednesday, I think.
Yeah.
Sloan posts Jahmyr Gibbs not for sale, takes him off the market. We then get to Thursday, trade deadline day. And what I will say
I think we're off a little bit here.
I am. I'm on the wrong
JT day. JT deal was... Sunday.
And then Monday. Yeah, I'm on the wrong week. Sorry. So we get to Monday. I'm already wishing it was Friday. I will say, what happened Saturday night? I know Tommy had his 30th birthday bash. I get a text from Tommy out of nowhere that says, let me pull it up so I can get it right. I have a lot of texts with Tommy over the last few days. So, it says, sorry, I'm being a little slow here.
You're good.
I want to make sure I get it right.
Real quick, while you're pulling that up, I'm going to give us a 15-second recap of another trade. So Matt sends Keenan Allen to Tommy for a 2028 third.
Thank you.
Not a ton to go over there, but you know, if you're going to make a run at the playoffs, you need some extra depth. So Matt gets a nice aging depth piece. So
yeah, very akin to our Aaron Jones deal. I would say very similar concept. Definitely. Fair deal all around. Don't blame Matt for wanting to get a little bit more depth. Okay, I found it. Tommy texts me at 7:15 Pacific time, which is 10:15 Eastern time, says, I'm not committed to it at all, but I'd entertain offers for Henry, Kittle, and CMC. And I say, love to see you texting me about this. And then I send him an offer for CMC and Henry. And I later said, I hope someone stole your phone to text me this. Because I will say, when I got the text, I had a brief moment of joy because I was like, oh, maybe he's actually going to trade. But then I actually thought I was getting pranked because I remembered he was out with all of you guys. Were you around when he sent this text? I know. Were you with him at the birthday party? Like, is there any more context you can provide?
I was. I was not aware that he sent that text. But in my conversation with him, he was making sure that I was aware that he was interested in executing what he was calling a soft landing to, I think, his four title run here. I guess once you win four, a fifth is just not that important to you. So he's interested in executing this soft landing. So he was, I think he pretty much told every dynasty manager at the party, that same phrase. So I'm sure that will not be the first time that most of us are hearing that phrase. So I did know that those three were available, that he was shopping them. Obviously it's not as appealing to a team like mine. So it kind of went in one ear out the other, but sure. I was aware that they were out there. And then at the end of the night, Matt tells, I think Austin and I or Colin and I or something like that he has a huge trade on the books. And I kind of assumed, pretty much saying, like, keep an eye out for this. And I kind of assumed that it meant that it was with Tommy, and it may have been. Matt can fill us in on that. But I was kind of assuming it was with Tommy because I had just listened to Tommy shop three of his better players all night long. So anyway, you can take it from there.
Okay, so context is great because Tommy and I go back and forth. Initial proposal I have is because his valuation of Henry for me was a lot higher than where I was valuing him at. I think he was valuing Henry as like maybe 2 years ago Derrick Henry, where like Lamar is peaking, Henry's peaking. He was looking for at least a first for Henry, and I was less inclined to give a first for, especially because the only first I really have is my 28 and then Ongood's 27. And I didn't want to give up my 28 first and go all in for both giving up two firsts for McCaffrey and Henry with how old I am. So I offer McCaffrey and a second for Ongood's 27 first. He wants CMC for just the pick. I say 2/3. So McCaffrey and 2/3 for the 27 first. Long texting. I'm double, triple texting Tommy because we get to trade deadline day. He's just thinking about it, not responding. He decides he wants to get rid of Evans as well, and he's like, Ridley for Evans. I think I would do that too. And so I hate Calvin Ridley. I hate him. So I know I haven't said that, but I do hate having him on my team. Ultimate roster clogger.
I hate him.
He'll probably be great now that he's on the Trojans. But, he calls me. Tommy calls me at... So we agree. We throw out the framework at Thursday at 9 a.m. He calls me at 5 p.m. on Thursday. He's like, oh, I want to do it. McCaffrey's got to be worth more than this. I saw the Jonathan Taylor trade. Like, McCaffrey has to be. And I'm like, you know what, Tommy? I tell him this on the phone. I said, he is probably worth more than what I'm offering you, but I'm sure you're shopping him and you're not getting any better offers like than what I'm offering you. So, and he's like, would you pay more in the off season? I'm like, would you pay this in the off season? I'm like, obviously not. He's going to be 30 next year. Like, this is the classic scenario of, and I'm not saying that Matt would be like, I wish I did the McCaffrey trade instead of this one. I bet secretly he probably would have rather given up just one Sloan's 26 first, gotten McCaffrey and been able to keep the first, second, and Ken Walker this year. But again, I think it relates to what you were talking about, the timing of these trades transpiring. So you see the trade go through late on Thursday. Kick has already started. What's your reaction?
Even though I had some level of warning that a trade like this might happen with Tommy's team, my jaw dropped when it came through. And what I still struggle with in this trade and even the subsequent ones is like, why now? Like, why all of a sudden at week 10 was it, as his team is in the playoffs, why is now the time to sell guys like CMC? And I completely understand that, you probably are not paying this 27 first for CMC after this playoff run, because you get one less playoff run of him on your team. And who knows, when he's not playable anymore. But I guess my thought is like, who cares? Like, use CMC for your, to go get your fifth title. And like, if CMC retires on your roster, whatever, he got you four titles. Like,
yeah.
How, who cares? Like, I think a lot of us in the league are just afraid to never get value for aging players. And I think myself included in this, we neglect the fact that they kind of gave us value, you know, in the past. And so it's like, I totally get wanting to come out of, you know, this contention period with kind of the soft landing that he was talking about. I just don't understand the trade deadline when you're in the thick of a playoff race. Like, and obviously Tommy's never experienced this, but getting to the playoffs can be rare. And I feel like you got to go all in any chance you get that you're going to be in the playoffs and kind of hope for the best. And honestly, I think if Tommy had zero championships, this trade never happens. But the fact that you have four already, it's kind of like, what's a fifth? And I guess that's probably the factor that I'm missing in my head is like, you know, there's only one person in this league that has the experience of winning four championships. And when you have that in your back pocket, it's almost like, who cares? You know, who cares if anybody else in the league gets what I'm doing here? Because, you know, I have the ultimate trump card. And yeah. I think the value is fine. I don't really get the, like, Mike Evans toss in. Mike Evans for Calvin Ridley, even with Evans being injured, is, like, hard to stomach, I guess. Evans is another one where, like, the injury's already happened. Like, yeah. If he retires on your roster, like, he retires, whatever, who cares? If he never plays again, like, yeah. I mean, if you traded him 2 weeks ago, you know, 2 weeks before the injury, you probably get a lot better value. But, like, the you know, what's happened, like, just hold him and let it ride. So I don't really get the Evans toss in. The value is I think, fine. I think it's hard when you see, like, a deal like the Jonathan Taylor deal happen a day earlier where a great player is met with a great return. And then you see this and it's like a great player is met with kind of a fine return, good return, whatever, but yeah. Not like exceptional. I think if these trades happened in reverse, it would feel a little bit different.
Yes. But I think
the JT deal is. Yeah,
I don't think Austin gets that value for JT if this trade happens beforehand. I feel like this is a market setting trade in terms of what that RB might be worth. And I think that Matt probably gets a bit of a discount. I'm not saying that I'm so awesome at trades or whatever. This is not. No, I will say I get the trade done. I get in my car. I immediately call Mike and then I immediately call you, Brian, to just gloat, ride my high horse. Mike, the most negative I've ever heard him on the phone, just one word responses to everything that I'm saying, like not entertaining it at all. And I do believe that McCaffrey will get injured before my playoff run starts. You don't 3x trash ass team for no reason. I don't call myself
that.
No,
title.
Yeah. I earned that title myself. But I couldn't not do it. When I saw McCaffrey was available, I'm just like, not only do I get the chance to acquire a player, I still think it goes to what you were talking about with why does Tommy do it now? I think he sees Matt make that monster move and he's like, Matt's team, I think, is better than mine. I think Mike's team is better than mine. And these guys, the odds that they're all, I mean, Tommy has been hurt by injuries. Mike Evans, James Conner, like he has started to see it a little bit. Like he still hasn't gotten as unlucky as he could get, but you see the cracks showing and you say, like, is it our year? And I think if Tommy keeps McCaffrey and Kittle, he actually has a shot at winning the title. I believe that he does. But for me, that's the reason why I go in on this trade is because I feel like by making the trade for McCaffrey, it really, if Tommy does still somehow manage to make the playoffs, which he could, I would love to see Tommy in the playoffs. I don't think he has the depth now to really feel the lineup that is competitive in the playoffs. Now, he might start tanking, which would make sense, but I think from my side, it is not only do I get to get an asset that has objectively been very good this year thus far. Maybe he is old. He definitely will get injured at some point, but you get the chance also to knock another playoff team down at least a notch, if not, you know, potentially eliminate them. And watch Tommy go win another championship after doing this, and we're all like, oh, what a fucking genius, you know, loses McCaffrey and ends up winning it all, right? That would be the most insane shit. But yeah, I'm going to say that I like the move, because if he doesn't, if he holds McCaffrey and Henry till they age out, he could be the worst team. Like, in 2 years, he could be the worst team. I mean, he has Amon-Ra and Ja'Marr Chase, which I think, but his QBs suck, and they're really sucking this year. I mean, like, Brock Purdy is good-ish, but he has no second quarterback. Like, Kyron Williams is a nice piece, too. He has, like, those – he has elite assets, and that's always been Tommy's claim to fame and what you're talking about. But I get the soft landing right now. I think he could retool within the next couple of years and be back in the playoffs just because of Ja'Marr Chase and Amon-Ra and Kyron Williams, too, to an extent.
Yeah. It's like, has he ever been the best team going into any of his playoff runs? Like, undoubtedly the best team? No. So I don't think that's any different this year. Even if he is looking at Matt and Mike make these like huge swing trades, it's hard. I don't know. I was not the second best team last year, yet I came in second. Like, the playoffs are fluky. So I don't know. It's an embarrassment of riches when you have four titles, and I guess these are the moves you get to make. I will point out, from the value perspective, like, if you look at, like, when he acquired CMC, he traded him for 110 and 210, essentially, with Sloan, and flips him for what should be a really good first-round pick in 2027. Although I will say, Ongid's 2027 first has absolutely, I think I told you this on the phone, has absolutely gotten worse since the Jackson Dart trade happened back in September. When that trade happened, that was like, well, lock it in as the 101 in 2027. And like, you know, Josh just got handed the 101. Now, could it be the 101? Yes. There's totally a chance. But Ongut has plenty of draft capital in this upcoming draft. His roster is better. And we've seen from Sloan's team this year that even bad rosters can have these huge boom weeks and get themselves out of the basement. And then you just watched Austin sell off his two bell cow running backs that have kept him out of the basement for the past 3 years. So it's like, Austin's roster has gotten worse. Tommy's roster is getting worse. Like, who knows what happens with mine? Like, who's to say that I don't, you know, sell the farm this time next year? Like, I don't think it's as good of a asset as it was 3 months ago.
I would agree with you. It's not as at the time of the Dart trade, it looked a lot worse. And I will say that Dart trade, you're probably not getting Dart for a single first anymore these days. Like, you know, and
no.
I mean, he probably bought him at his lowest value that he could have, which we would have thought. At the moment. But I mean, I'm looking back, and Tommy, when he acquired him last year, 25 first, 25 second, you know, obviously could have ranged anywhere from 1.7 to 1.10. But he also got Jordan Mason in that deal, the backup in the deal as well. Yeah, McCaffrey's value hardly goes down. I mean, year over year, I mean, he is the RB2 overall this season. So he's still having an insane McCaffrey year. Not as efficient on the ground as he has been in the past, but like, the what he does out of the backfield catching the ball is absolutely insane. So I'm doing it if I'm him. The trade I'm not, I know I'm saying I'm doing it if I'm him. If I had, like you said, if I hadn't won a championship, I'm holding McCaffrey and I'm like riding this to the playoffs and watching it like fail miserably the next season if it does. But you do whatever it takes to win the championship. I honestly could have seen him being a buyer at the trade deadline, because he adds a couple more fringe pieces. He trades a third for Aaron Jones. That's like a nice little depth piece for him to have there at the end too. I think he easily could have gone the opposite way this deadline. And I know he hates dealing with trades, so this was a big one for him. And it makes me think about the next one that he makes, where he gives up George Kittle for David Njoku, a third and a fourth. And I hated this trade for Tommy. I know Kittle is old, But this feels like a Travis Kelce situation where you don't, like, this guy is just good. When he plays, he is good. And tight ends can be good for a very long time. Like, they age typically very well. Njoku, a third and a fourth, is nothing. Like, that is, like, Njoku is a, like, you never want to start him. He plays on a horrible team. And then a third and a fourth is basically nothing. And it makes me think about somebody like Tyler Warren, right? Where you're like, this guy is so good. You watch what is debatedly a top five, which is unquestionably a top five tight end in the NFL when he's healthy in fantasy. And he goes for a third and a fourth and a non-startable tight end. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, great trade for Mike. Really, like, I kind of love the swoop in at the end to go upgrade a position of weakness. But I think this fits our theme that we've talked about in every, essentially every deal before this. Who in this league is paying, let's call it a single second. Who's paying a single second for Kittle? Like, I think you probably would have offered that if you were interested in making that move. Like, none of the teams at the bottom, you know, none of the teams from Dylan on down are spending a second on a 32-year-old tight end. And so it's like the best of what's left. I'll be honest, I tried to pull off, you know, that type of move for James Conner too, because even though I don't need James Conner, if I can get James Conner for, you know, pennies, I'm going to do it and see what I can do. Obviously, you know, as we can see, Tommy didn't pull the trigger on it, but we discussed it for a minute or two. I was offering just disgustingly low grades because I knew nobody else was asking for James Conner. So I'm like, if he really wants him off his roster, he'll accept. You know, I think one of my offers was a fourth and who was it? Darnell Washington.
So that's disgusting.
It's really disgusting. But it's also like you're bidding against nobody. So sure. If, you know, this is a situation where, you know, Tommy wants to get something for Kittle, he did get something. It's just not a ton. Great move for Mike, though.
Love the move for Mike. I mean, Mike is now has an embarrassment of mid riches at tight end. You know, like, he has a bunch of guys that you're not really sure about where to start them. And Gadsden's been looking really good. You know, Kincaid never really that reliable. I love Mike. Just going and getting a guy that you're going to plug in for the rest of the season. You don't even have to think about it. And you give up what is nothing to your team. You're never thinking about the assets you gave up for that deal. I love it. I think it's such a good deal for Mike. And maybe the most value I think a competing team got at the trade deadline without really having to give anything up. And it makes sense that it comes after that because it's, again, a trade that is valued based on the move that comes before it, where you see Tommy is kind of giving up on the season and you swoop in for what is the oldest asset. The thing that I don't understand is, why does Tommy keep Derrick Henry? I don't. If you're liquidating like this, like, I offered a 26 second for Derrick Henry.
Ooh.
And it was Sloan's. Sloan's 26 second. I'm like,
yeah.
That is, I feel like that is a wonderful deal. You know, or I think it was like DJ Moore and Chris Godwin, which I know I sent that offer around to a lot of people. But even that still, I feel like I would accept. I mean, like, you're getting a little bit younger, getting some assets that are playable in the future. I don't understand the reason you hold on to Derrick Henry. He's definitely not going to get any more value after this year. He is, and he can continue to defy logic, but he's not without signs of slowing down this year at some point. So obviously no Lamar, but that didn't make sense to me. Do you have any idea why Tommy kept on Derrick Henry?
Yeah, that's a very good point. I hadn't really thought about it, but you're right. That totally fits the same mold as all these other trades. And honestly, so does James Conner. Like, I mean, if you're going to tear it down, get rid of him. So yeah, no, I know this is, it's just every player that Tommy traded at this deadline, it like feels like they should retire a Trojan. And maybe when they retire, they'll go sign like a 1 year or 1 day deal with the Trojans. And they'll definitely go into the Hall of Fame as Trojans. But yeah, it's those weird, like, you know, superstar players that go spend one season on another team. It just doesn't feel right. But Yeah, it is what it is. So excited to see kind of what happens. You want to transition to playoff talk here?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an easy transition because you look at the table right now and you really see the monster divide between the top four teams and the rest of the league. I'm projected for 162 next week, which is fucking insane. That's maybe the highest ever projected score we've had in our league. I mean, if you could just win championships on projected score, I would be 3x champion of the league. So we know what that means. Mike's 149, Matt 148, Dylan 143, and then we have a 20-point gap to the next team, which is still surprisingly Tommy at 123 next week. And so, obviously projections don't mean that much. We're going to see a bunch of craziness happen. Things will play out differently than we expect. But I think Tommy could still make the playoffs just because of the lack of time. But man, it really seems like it's me, Matt, Dill, and Mike are really the four playoff teams at this point.
Yeah, I think this is going to get very interesting down the stretch because you're right that from, on paper, Dylan's team is more talented than Tom's at this point, but a 9 table point head start is a lot, with only 4 weeks left to play. And I think it's tough because Dylan's team has been so hit or miss this year. Like he had a yet another 2-point week. Like talk about a missed opportunity for Dylan's team. Like you have a week where Tommy finishes in last and sells off his entire roster, and he couldn't manage more than 2 table points. If he puts up 5, this is looking a lot better for him. I think this one will come down to week 14. Like
I think you're right. Yeah.
I worry that Dylan's team is just too volatile week to week to make this happen. And like Tom just still has, like with Amon-Ra and Ja'Marr Chase and those like just huge floors that those two guys have week to week. Like, man, it feels like a missed opportunity to have Tom finish with 1 point and not take advantage of it. So I think it'll be fun. I think this is definitely going to add some intrigue to that last playoff spot.
It would be crazy if Tommy did still make the playoffs. I think he is probably the odds like favorite to make the playoffs over Dill with the 9-point gap and 4 weeks left. Yeah, 11, 12, 13, 14, 4 weeks left. I mean, 9 is not the biggest cushion. And honestly, as I think about it, Dylan is probably one of the biggest winners of the trade deadline. He has to make no moves to get better and significantly improves his odds of making the playoffs. But I don't know. This is where I'm like, maybe Dill should have tried to make one move, maybe just to consolidate a few assets, get a little bit better, add some like quality starting depth. Yeah, I don't know. I really, if you had to call it right now, would you say that it's Tommy or would you say that it's Dylan?
I would say that it's Tommy because I think 9 points is a lot. And like I said, I think Dylan's team is just too volatile for it to happen. What's your call?
I think it's going to be Dylan because Dylan, I think, has more like Dylan's team hasn't been great this year, but he has a 9, 3/8, and a 10. I think that Dylan, all it takes is one more 10. Tommy has one more down week. He's starting Rashad Bateman this week. That is horrible. It's a horrible starting player. It's basically a zero in your lineup. And Rashad Bateman will probably get a touchdown. I mean, great, but most of the time it is a zero. So I think we'll be in a couple of weeks, this gap will have narrowed, if not completely evaporated, and Dylan will kind of start to pull away at this point. But man, it's crazy to see that Tommy's that far in the playoffs and then tanks the team. That I could never do it. It's just when you look
I
at the
couldn't
table,
either.
it's like you're in the playoffs. Like, and then you're like, you know what? Let's call it. Like, imagine you're a Colts fan. The Colts are, they get to the trade deadline this week, and they're like, you know what? We're going to trade Jonathan Taylor, Daniel Jones. We just don't believe that Daniel Jones is the guy this year. Like, we just want to maximize the assets that we get. It feels wrong.
I know, I know. It was hard to watch it happen, but I'm happy for Tom that he's in a spot that he can feel comfortable doing that because of all the success he's had. I want to real quickly point out, like, what a year for trades. Like, you look at, just think about some of the names that were moved to contenders this year. We have Saquon, we have JT, we have A-Chain, we have Pat Mahomes, we have Christian McCaffrey, all dealt at some point this year. I'm sure I'm even missing some here too. Just like wild. I mean, George Kittle, obviously, you know, big name too.
Sure.
Really wild trades go down this year. Yeah, it's been intriguing. I do worry that, like, we've had a separation in the league for a while, and this year might have, like, cemented it for the next 2 or 3 years, as, you know, before these players, like, kind of start to age out a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I'm I feel like this was a hard trade deadline for me to see go down, because this just made my chances of contending next year way steeper.
Yeah.
Because, you know, most of these players moved are not going to be, you know, any worse come week one next year. So,
and you look at the asset consolidation that has happened.
Yeah.
Basically, you, me, Dylan, Matt, and Mike have pretty much, I mean, Mike has some seconds, but all of the firsts have been consolidated in the rest of the leagues. Teams in our league. So five Austin's teams.
Learned, yeah.
Yes, they own all of the firsts for the next 2 years, right? I think the only one of us with a first for the next 2 years is Matt has your first this year. One of the other picks has gone to those teams. So a great wealth redistribution within the league. You see the tangible asset of players being traded for the, like, unknown asset of picks. Obviously, they still continue to have value year over year, but you never know what the player is going to turn out to be. It's a fun movement. I'm glad we saw kind of the redistribution of that, because, you know, what will be interesting is my team's going to start getting older. Matt's team is going to start getting older. Mike's team is incredibly young, so he has, like, a very long time. But when our teams start getting out, are these bad teams that have all the picks, are they going to trade away their picks for the old players at that point? Like, who's going to be the buyer of vets in a year, 2 years? Like, there's not, like, I don't know. It'll be weird to see. It'll be interesting to see if these teams are willing to pay up in the way that you've seen, you know, particularly Matt and I pay up. Mike has done an awesome job of really just paying up for young assets that are slightly distressed and finding really good value in them.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think we kind of teased this at the very beginning, so maybe this is a way for us to come full circle here. But I kind of wonder if that point leads us into, you know, maybe 1 or 2 years of very quiet deadlines and quiet trade seasons, because you kind of have this flipped league right now where, like, the contending teams don't really have assets to improve themselves, and the, you know, the bottom feeders are obviously waiting out their picks. So, any other thoughts on why this trade deadline specifically was so much more eventful than the previous two or three years?
I think we just had a real arms race, and three teams that were really willing. Like, I think one of the big reasons is, if you look at the playoff landscape the last few years, never have included both Mike and Matt, right? Typically, teams that are much more quiet in general, Sloan, Dylan, Tommy, me, I'm really the only person that has consistently made the playoffs the last years that has been, like, active in our league in terms of trading. And so this is the first year where you have two or three really highly active trading teams. And I think that is what has contributed to the deadline being as exhilarating as it was this year.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Well, I'm fun excited, stuff. Brian. Yeah, it's a fun trade deadline. I was excited. Like I said, calling people on the phone last night, just needed to gloat. I needed my day. And then, you know, I think everything gets worse really from the moment you make the trade, unless you win the championship. So you have to appreciate the little moments of fantasy football, and it's fun to be able to get on a call with you and reflect on it.
Totally agree. Little PSA to the group too. I don't want to speak for you, so feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. I personally feel like I may take the week off next week with just, you know, as we guide through, mm-hmm. you know, these last 4 weeks, no trades, no, you know, big stuff to discuss. So if anybody else wants to fill in to do the pod, I feel like these, you know, we're in the home stretch here. I might be a good time for some new voices. So if you want to do it, you're welcome to. But yeah, little PSA, if anybody is itching to get on the pod.
You know, I'm always happy to not do a podcast, Brian. I love doing it, but I also don't mind skipping it and listening and just.
Yeah. And week 11, it's like, like I said, no trades.
This feels like a good time to get a rookie in, right? Like get somebody in, 11, 12, maybe Austin, you want to come on here a little bit. Nobody's going to be listening. Stakes are low. You can do 20 minutes, just kind of.
It's time that the interns get a run. So, yeah,
I love
we deserve
it, Brian.
A vacation after this.
Totally. All right, Brian. Well, it's good to see you, buddy. Thanks for joining. It's always great to do a podcast together.
You too. We'll see you guys later.